Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Now, to talk Nashville Predators, Len Gleno.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Paul, for those that didn't join us last year with John in studio, the origin of Glenn Gleno would
this
be...
This is another Hope Hines story. We were talking about Hope earlier. We used to, in our younger days at the beginning, we would do the 5-plus show, and we being me first, and we would watch each other on there, and our friend Jake, I actually wore his tie on one show, so they called in, and he said...
Are we on your lap right now? You're getting really quiet.
He asked a question and he said, he asked a question and he said, I love your tie. I love your tie. And I said, Hope, this is John Glennon of the Commercial Appeal who covers the Oilers as well. And Hope said, is this Glenn Gleno?
But I did not.
He had no idea who Glenn Gleno or John Glennon was. I don't know if to this day he knows.
Nonetheless, I did not attempt to get in a fight with Hope Hines.
That's true.
Yeah, we discussed that earlier.
Yeah.
Or did you back down from a fight from Hope Hines? I would have more respect for Paul if he was the one trying to fight Hope Hines.
Explain to us why you use a tape recorder that most children in America today would not recognize as a recording device.
It's very comfortable. You know, I've got a couple of these newfangled digital recorders at my abode. I have used them in the past. I find more comfort in the old school tape recorder, with you, if you will. I find it easier to go back and forth while I'm transcribing. Hence, I still have the old school. I keep it in a glass case at home. Air is not allowed to touch it in any way.
Would you like Vrabel to have paused the press conference so you could run down and flip your tape?
The tape did not actually run out.
Mike is calling out the wrong thing.
It was actually a garble in the tape. So that's what the problem was.
That would have been great if you jumped on the mic when you went up there and said that was actually just a garble in the tape.
How many tapes do you have stashed away? I know he was hoarding these because he knows soon, if not already, they're not going to exist.
Yes, I order them from Amazon from time to time. Other kind people in the media find them randomly around their home and donate them to me on occasion as well, because they know of my need in this regard. So it's still hanging in there. And see, the thing about the Vrabel's line yesterday was indeed good, but I have to say that's what I have been saying for ever since I've been using it for the past few years. People say, what are you using that for? I said, it's going straight to the Smithsonian after I'm done. So good line, Mike, but it's been used before by me.
I would love to have the audio of the recorder.
David has no way to record this analog primitive thing. You can't
plug it in. What does that garble sound like?
One more on the Titans
take on the press conference yesterday. Was Mike Vrabel confrontational? Do you think there's a new way of doing things now with the Titans, with the new head coach?
I think there's a new way of doing things, yeah. I'm not sure if I'd go quite as far as confrontational, but I do think that he wanted to, put his imprint on his first big local media press conference. You could tell from the very first question when he stood up there, and I think first thing he said was, all right, who wants first? Or something along those lines. It was almost like, bring it, I'm ready.
Meet me in the middle of the octagon right now.
Yeah, it really was. So
I'm going to choke one of you out.
It was a little bit different of a tone, but that's just who he is. You know, it's not as if he was making that up. That's just kind of his persona. We'll have to adjust to a different guy. But, yeah, I thought it was a bit unusual to have him kind of go off a little bit on the tangent about you know, filming in the locker room and so forth. But again, I think he wanted to sort of, hey, this is me. This is what you're getting. Let's kind of lay out the groundwork, the rules right now.
Do you think with his tone that he was joking when he said that people need to raise their hand in the press conference?
I would have to know Mike Vrabel better than I do right now. I'll retreat with that one. Honestly,
just your initial impression. What would you think? Knowing him that well.
Honestly, I do think there was some humor intended there. It wasn't like a hearty belly laugh kind of humor, but I think he was.
I think he was almost saying, hey, why don't you guys get your bleep straight?
Exactly.
I would like to
almost
see.
Almost the same kind of thing you'd say to your football players, kind of.
Right. I'd like to see Paul have to raise his hand, and he would just constantly have a hand raised at all times.
He would raise it halfway through the Bramble's comment each time.
Paul would have something that hangs from the ceiling. He could, like, hang his
hand,
wrist in.
Because I need my hands.
Where your hand's just constantly up.
Here's another funny note. I don't know who took the first one. You know, Jim Wyatt has two pencils sticking out his visor at all times. And so somebody came down to do something right before. Might have been a PR guy, and he jokingly took one of the pencils out. And Jim was like, that's why I have my backup. And then when Vrabel came down, he took the other pencil out of Jim's visor.
That's pretty good.
And I was like, well, that was the backup. What? So I don't know if Jim has any handwritten notes from that press conference.
I think he's definitely going to be the kind of guy who keeps the media on the toes a little bit more.
Yeah, which is not a bad thing.
No, it's not. You know, Mike Mularkey couldn't find really a nicer guy to deal with the media. Very patient, very... open, I thought, very explanatory. It's just a different persona with Mike Vrabel.
Which we will learn.
John, let's dive into the Predators. Opening round of the playoffs begins on Thursday, 8:30 face-off against Colorado. Paul, we were discussing earlier the anticipation for this series. We've been discussing the playoffs now for months with this team, almost to a point where we want to hit the fast-forward button for it to get here. Now that it's finally here, Paul, I think you posed
the
question.
People are kind of thinking,
is there a nervousness or?
I mean, I'm just wondering if there should be. Last year, the roles were flipped and the Predators rolled over the number one seed. And it seems to me the town's pretty, it seems to be a buzz. Like, will they sweep or will they lose one game?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's almost, for months, it's been not only this series, but people have almost been planning ahead to the Stanley Cup final. And you know, I think fans, just after having that great experience that they did last year, have all been kind of like, oh, I can't wait till the parties of the conference final. And yeah, where are we going to experience the Stanley Cup finals and so forth, just because they enjoyed it so much. But, you know, hockey of any of the sports, I think there is the least amount of home ice advantage in the playoffs. And the Predators, of course, were the perfect example of it last year. They won three series as the underdog. They won on the road. And you look in recent years, number one teams have been knocked off in the first round. Obviously, the Preds did it last year. You go back to 2012, Vancouver knocked off L.A. 2010, Montreal knocked off Washington, the number one seed. So it does happen from time to time, and I do think the Predators are prohibitive favorites, but certainly you can't look past anyone.
How much of a factor is Varlamov out and Bernier in for the Avalanche? Is there a real drop-off there, or are they sort of the same guy?
I think it's a drop-off, but honestly, I think of the two injuries that Colorado has, I think the other one, Eric Johnson, their defenseman, big defenseman, 6'5", you know, well over 200 pounds, good, solid D-man, and he was lost near the end of the season as well. I think he is a bigger loss to me than Varlamov, the goaltender, because you've got a decent backup, and Jonathan Bernier did not have too much success against the Predators last year in the Western Conference Final, but you look overall at his record against versus the Predators, and I think it's 9-4. Bernier's record overall against the Preds is 9-4. So that's it's a guy you can win with. It's not just a stiff with a huge drop off from Varlamov. But to me, as I say, I think Eric Johnson, their defensive core in general is not that deep, Colorado's. And when you lose a guy like Eric Johnson, who was one of their top defensemen just before the end of the season, I think that hurts Colorado even more than Varlamov did.
Can it be as simple as with the Preds' depth, their skill, their play in net, everything they have going for them, that if they can just contain that top line for Colorado, they should be in good shape?
It should be. That is a considerable challenge because that top line is young. It's fast. It's got skill. It's a big challenge to stop. And I think we'll probably see a couple of Predators lines go against it. I think we'll probably see the Johansson line go against it, and probably the third line with Nick Bonino. We'll see that time against that top line as well. So, if they can stop them, there's a big drop off from that top line for Colorado down to the second line and so forth. And when you look at what the Predators have in terms of their advantages, there are just so much more. As you mentioned, the depth, they should be able to wear them down. The goaltending with Pekka-Rinne, we could go on and on. But certainly that is the big Colorado advantage, or the big Colorado plus is that top line. And I think if you're looking for any other kind of an X factor maybe for the Avs, it's just that I really don't think there's much pressure on this Avs team at all. They've had an unbelievable regular season when you compare what they did last year. They were basically the worst team in the league, and they had a huge turnaround. They made it to the playoffs despite these two key injuries. They're young, so nobody expects them to do much. So there's a little bit of that, lack of pressure for the Avs coming in.
What we know, the depth is there for the long haul, and if an injury or two happen, they'll be better equipped for it than they were last year. As they start out, who do you anticipate the odd man or odd men out will be, presuming they're starting this thing healthy and they have more than they need?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that they're going to be completely healthy. I think Kelly Yarncroke is close, very close, but I'm not sure he's quite there yet. And of course, he's missed so many games, it'll take a little bit of time. So I would suspect he will likely sit out. I think Scott Hartnell is probably another odd man out. He's obviously brings a lot to the table. He's a veteran guy. He can score goals. But there are some other guys who can do more things that can kill penalties, that can win faceoffs, et cetera. So I suspect Scott Hartnell will be the other guy. And, of course, the youngster, the very talented 18-year-old prospect, Ellie Tolvanen, I think he will sit out as well. And, frankly, I think that's the right call. There was obviously a ton of hype for Ellie Tolvanen coming in because he had done so much in the other leagues around the world and been so impressive in the Olympics and so forth. But let's face it, this is the NHL. This is a step up from what he'd done before. It's going to take anybody a little bit of time to adjust, let alone be thrown in with a 5 games left in the regular season.
How many games did he play?
He played 3.
Played 3. So David Poile told us they're not concerned about the 10 games. If they need him for those, if Laviolette feels like he's the best guy for the lineup in those, they don't care about sacrificing the year, if you will.
Right.
What's your sense of the odds that there are 6 games in his playoff future if they play here?
If the Preds continue to play well and stay healthy, I think, they're better off letting him rest and letting that contract stay as it is. As David Poile said, if the Predators are down in a series or if there's a serious injury, yeah, at that point he's not going to say, I'm still not going to play him because I don't want to get him 1 year closer to restricted free agency. At that point, he rolls them into the lineup. But, the way things are going right now, they won the President's Trophy. They've got 2 very skilled top lines, and that's where you're going to play. Ellie Tolvanen most likely is one of those top 2 lines, and there's just not that need to kind of make him learn on the fly right now. So at this point, I say rest him until in case of emergency. Put him in the glass case.
John Glennon with
the tape recorder.
What a what a luxury, though, to have depth-wise with him and not really need him yet, but he's there in case you do. I mean, last year they had to rely on some young guys for depth purposes with Auberg, Sissons.
Gaudreau,
yes. They even played Zolnarchuk last year in the playoffs.
Sure, yeah, came up big for them in a game or two as well. But, yeah, you're right. Tolvanen represents the kind of guy they didn't necessarily have last year, and that's a guy who's skilled enough to jump in on those top 2 lines and skill-wise not skip a beat. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be on par with guys who've been playing 3, 4, 5 years in the NHL. That's going to take time, obviously. But at least in terms of his skill, his goal-scoring ability, if, say, a Kevin Fiala goes down or a Craig Smith whoever, and we saw those kind of things happen last year, that's when you see more potential for a guy like Elly Tolvanen. Although, you know, I say that, but even the first injury, you know, you're still looking at a guy like a Scott Hartnell is still sitting there, you know, who's scored all kinds of goals in his NHL career, who's played on the top two lines from time to time, even this year, you know, and Yarncroke, who's the same way, who probably won't start off in the lineup. So it might take a couple of injuries, you know, in my opinion, before we see Tolvanen.
Before we move on to more of the playoff matchup, a step back just to appreciate what they accomplished in the regular season, because 53 wins, 117 points, and the ability. What impressed me most, John, was the approach to the pressure of expectation all year. We were talking playoffs in December for this group, and you know, last year there was a buzz in the city, but it was a surprise about it all. It was like, wow, this is actually happening. They're continuing this run. This year, the buzz is much different. There's an expectation of Stanley Cup and skating the Cup this year instead of watching it skate on your home ice. But this team has carried that expectation with them along the way, and they're not afraid to discuss it. You know, and in a sport that is filled with superstition, not touching the President's Trophy and doing different things, this is the opposite team. They don't really care about all that, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, it has been a great regular season, and I think, as you say, it goes back to last year, because in the playoffs last year it was an underdog situation all the time. There was that unbelievable rush to get to the Stanley Cup Finals, and I think especially when you come up second in the Stanley Cup Finals, there's that natural tendency. You know, you're back in camp a few months later. The stakes are nowhere near as high, and you're still in the back of your mind. You're still thinking, geez, we came so close, you know, and you still got that disappointed sort of taste in your mouth. But the Preds, you know, if they struggled at all with that, it was probably the first 8-10 games. Ever since then, they've been one of the most consistent winning teams in the league. And to me, I think that's one of the most impressive things, or two of the most impressive things, I would say. One is the fact that they, I think, only once or twice this year lost three games in a row, which is almost unheard of. And two, the success they had rallying in the third period, especially towards the second half of the season, you know, really showed a tremendous resilience to me, which was especially strong, or which was especially impressive because, as you said, for the longest time, we've known this team is going to be in the playoffs. We've known they might be the top team in the playoffs, and it's almost been like a, well, what time is our? Have we hit the playoffs yet? You know, and I think they had to fight through that at times this year, and they did to win the President's Trophy.
Well, and I think too, the expectation of carrying that over. I certainly am guilty of this, of just viewing as it would be easy to get back to the level that they were. But look at Chicago; they're not in the postseason this year. They were the one seed. Look at Vancouver and Edmonton. I mean, nowhere to be found right now. And the Predators were able to repeat what they did last year. That's impressive. And to do it in the West as opposed to the East this year, they should get more credit than maybe what I've given them throughout the season for that.
Yeah, again, a tremendous year. And I think, you know, I think some of the credit also has to go, as always, to, you know, David Poile, not only just tweaked with that lineup that made the Stanley Cup final year last year, but you know, added a very significant piece in Kyle Turris, which was huge for this team. And another piece that gets overlooked a little bit, Alexi Emelin on defense, you know, turned out to be a very impressive addition as well. So I think he gets some of that credit for not just saying, boy, we were pretty good last year.
And Hartman.
And Ryan, yeah. Hartman at the trade deadline as well. And of course, you know, talking Mike Fisher back into the game as well. So it wasn't as if they kind of sat back and said, well, we're pretty good. We made the final, and we're fairly young. We're going to do it again. You know, he took the initiative and made some changes and altered this team in a favorable way.
John, whenever I started to see this push for Pekka and the Vezina, everyone starts mentioning the stats from January to now. When did you actually realize, you know, Pekka's got a chance to make a run at this thing?
You know, I think probably earlier than that. You know, it to me, this year was so consistent for him. It was never as if he was in a slump, really, and battled his way out. And, you know, there were times over the last few years where Pecks would kind of up and down. There were some times that he was a little bit warmer than others. I think, you know, certainly towards the end of last regular season and the early part of the playoffs, especially through most of the playoffs, actually, very good. But you know, hadn't necessarily been the case consistently over the past few years. But this one, to me, you know, I think he made some changes. It's you know, well documented, kind of both mentally and physically in his game this season. And the consistency to me has been outstanding. And when you finally started to see those, especially to me, the shutouts, you know, rack up one after another, and he wound up, you know, right near the top of the league on in the shutout front. And you know, another thing I think that came to light is, you know, people start looking at the more analytical stats also. And when you look at what the Predators have allowed in terms of the so-called high danger scoring chances this year, surprisingly enough, they've given up a fairly good amount of high danger scoring chances in comparison to what they themselves have had. And when you look at Pekka's save percentage on those, second highest in the league in terms of stopping high danger scoring chances. So, you know, a combination of the consistency, the shutouts, and kind of that the high danger success as well. You know, I think certainly has to make him the front runner for the Vezina.
Hey, we know the voting's happened as a regular season award. When's the announcement?
The announcements are not till the summertime, I believe. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I know, you know, they've the last few
at
years
their banquet thing.
Yeah, in Vegas, they go there and announce them. So as far as I can recall, I believe that's accurate. They're in the summertime, so it'll be a while. So, which is good, you know, you don't distract the players during the playoffs and so forth.
John, I feel like you did a great job calling your shot last year with this question. We always asked you a player on the Preds roster that you thought was due to step up, a guy they needed a bigger contribution from, almost from game to game, and it seems like it always came true for the next game, which is in large part why they went on such a run. Who's the guy you'd like to see a little bit more from going into this Colorado series?
I'm going to go with a little Kevin Fiala in that regard, because just the little sample size we got of Kevin Fiala in the playoffs last year was very intriguing. I thought he had, you know, a great start and really start. That, to me, was really the start of what this season has been for Kevin Fiala, kind of a breakout regular season where he topped 20 goals. But obviously we haven't seen it from Kevin in the playoffs yet, simply because he was injured fairly early in last year's postseason. So if a guy like that can come through and add to what the Predators had through more of the playoffs last year, I think that'll be a significant boost. And he's a guy that can really help carry that second line as well. We expect good things, obviously, from Forsberg, Arvidsson, Johansson. If the Preds can get big contributions, too, from that second line, that's huge.
John Glennon in studio with us. Going back to Pekka for a moment, I think the key for this postseason, he's never been as rested as he will be going into this postseason, going into playoff hockey in April. I mean, that's a massive factor for him.
It is. You know, last year he was it was fairly close. You know, they played a lot of Saros down the stretch, or you know, maybe the second half of the season. But I think some of that last year was actually because Saros was and Rinne in some of the second half of the season were fairly close together. Saros was playing so well. This year it's been more of a let's get Pekka rest on a regular situation. And yeah, I think he's in great shape, which is good. As we know, Pex is not a spring chicken. He's not a youngster here heading into the playoffs. But when you look at, and I mentioned some of the changes that we've seen in his game and especially physically, you know, to me, the word you hear a lot, it's a quieter style of for Pekka Rinne. Now, you don't see as many rebounds with him coming loose. You don't see as much movement in the crease. He's so sharp in terms of preparation. There's an efficiency of movement now with Pekka Rinne that I think has been better than we've seen in several years. So I think those are some of the reasons that this Pekka Rinne is probably the best we've seen in, you know, half a decade or so, which certainly bodes well. And, you know, heaven forbid if for the Preds, if anything happened to Pekka Rinne, the good news, Saros playing out of his mind in a backup role.
And that was kind of be my question. I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer here, but Pekka's 35 years old. And the Preds, while they have a good mix of young and old, their young core is very promising for a, let's say, 3 to 5 year window where they could be really competitive for a Stanley Cup. But in order to win the Stanley Cup, they're going to have exceptional play in net. You cannot factor in Pecorine for the next 3 to 5 years playing at a high level at 35 years old right now. So how confident are you in Yusei Saros that he can be the guy that can step right in and carry the torch and keep this team competitive for a cup?
I think there were some legit concerns early in this season about Saros. It did not start out particularly well for him. Ended up going back to Milwaukee on a couple occasions, kind of getting some more ice time up there, kind of getting in a regular rhythm. Since then, you know, probably the last two-thirds of the season or so has been tremendous, I thought. To me, the biggest concern, obviously, and it will always be the question asked of Saros, is the size question. You know, he's only 5'10", and around, you look around the league right now, and Pecorine is not all that abnormal in you know, being a 6'5" guy. There's a lot of 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", even bigger than Pecorine out there. So the concern or the question for Saros is he going to be big enough to guard those top corners? That's occasionally where you see the puck end up, you know, from time to time on UC Saros. But he's changed his style, I think, well to eliminate as much of those as he can, being 5'10". But on the other hand, he is so quick in the net, so fast from side to side, from post to post, so good in terms of preparation. That's what makes him better than a large portion of the NHL goalies. So, yeah, at this point, I think we've seen enough of a sample size to say I think the Preds are pretty confident in him going ahead.
You have any concern with a propensity to take penalties, and how do you turn that off?
It is. I think it should be a concern for the Preds, and I believe they finished the year as the highest average per game in terms of penalty minutes.
Which didn't get a lot of noise because they were busy winning.
Right.
But in a tight playoff game, it could be a much bigger
problem.
Where
every goal matters that much more, yeah, it certainly could be a concern. And when you combine that a little bit with the fact that in recent games, last 10 games, the penalty kill has not been great. I think in 5 of the last 10 games, they've given up at least 2 goals in a game on a penalty kill, which is not good. They're right in the middle of the league the last 10 games. I think the penalty kill has only been about 75%. So you combine those two things, propensity for penalties and the PK being a little bit down for the last 2 games, that is a cause for concern. They've kind of gone in waves in terms of taking penalties. You know, they'll go for a few games and they'll seem to have gotten it out of the system. But I think if you're Peter Laviolette, I'm sure what drives him most crazy about the penalties is just those kind of mindless hooking, holding, high-sticking, especially in the offensive zone. It's one thing if a guy is in a one-on-one chance and you're hacking him across the stick to prevent that, Peter Laviolette's going to be fine with that. That's going to be okay. But I think a lot of times what we've seen, not a lot of times, but too many times for the Predators is these offensive zone penalties where they're reaching, they're trying, there's plenty of effort there, but instead of that effort being shown in skating a little harder, it's that tendency to reach and to hook or to hold. So that is one of the few things I think the Predators do have to kind of shore up as they go into the postseason.
We'll be watching that.
Will you be surprised that this is anything more than a 5-game series?
I could potentially see 6, but I doubt it. Everything seems to say 5. You know, as I said, the few things that the Avs have in their advantage, no pressure, absolutely no pressure on them. Everybody's, hey, this is a great year. You've done wonderful things. You managed to get in the playoffs. So they're you know, it's all house money right now for the Avalanche. Two, it can be weird sometimes playing in Denver with the altitude. Sometimes that plays with people's minds. Sometimes that is a legitimate concern. Maybe that buys the Avs a win on its own. And again, 3, if that top line for the Avs just goes bonkers. You know, those are really the only factors I think in their favor. You look on the other side of it, there's just so many advantages for the Preds. The depth up front, the depth back, the goaltending, you know, I think it's there's every reason to believe it should be five games or so for the Preds.
Good to have John back in studio with us.
Good
Glenn,
to be here.
Glenn, you could follow him on Twitter, Glenn on Sports.
That was Glenn on Sports, midday 180 Predators correspondent.